time on their road beyond my years. I've no sorrow, but today I don't walk alone. Step by step.
Welcome to Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Mark. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that are going to make noise or is going to distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? Okay, next we're going to do the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, we have the banner up top, and there should be some side cards in the front of your seat that have it too. So I'm going to lead. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. Amen. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree, and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked a friend, Dave, to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. Come on up, Dave. Two sides on that bad boy.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Dave. spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change would hardly have been brought by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could have seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource, which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of a spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most empathetically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you, Dave. So the main purpose that we read that is because the main purpose of doing the 12 steps is to have what he just read. So it's kind of important to know what it is. So we read that every Thursday night here. One last thing before I introduce the speaker. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane / meeting mode or just turn them off. If you need to use the phone, just kindly go outside. And if you could, wait till the meeting's over to get coffee and just try to respect the speaker. So now it's a part of the meeting where I introduce the speaker. Take this off here real quick. So tonight Pat is on his, I believe, 6th or 7th session. It's all kind of meshing into one right now. So when I first started coming to AA a few years back, I was going to a lot of open discussion meetings. And for a long time, I just wasn't hearing it. I was just hearing the same old dribble over and over and over. And Pat was doing this big book study down at 4D in Hollywood. And it blew me away because I was like, wow, somebody's finally talking my language. So a few years later, it's still new to me. He's really opens my mind to a lot of things, and I really enjoy hearing him. He's been great this past few weeks, and I'm really psyched to what he has for us tonight. Come on up, Pat. Welcome, Pat. Yeah, no problem, Pat.
Uh-huh. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Pat. And thanks to the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the program of AA, I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And for that, I'll be forever grateful. AA didn't just save my life, but it gave me a life worth living, and I absolutely love my life today. I love everything about recovery. I love AA. I love CA. I love all the A's. And I have an absolute blast. I still chase this thing like I chased it when I got here. You know, I mean, we were doing a big book study actually last night, and we were in that at the end of There Is a Solution, and they talk about, you know, grabbing the life preserver as if we were drowning men and women, you know, once I engaged in the program, which is the book, you know, which I didn't know, by the way, when I first got here, I was coming to meetings, and a lot of meetings. I mean, a lot. Like they were saying 90 and 90. I did a 270 and 90. You know, I mean, and I'm not exaggerating. I was in at least three meetings a day because really I didn't want to, I couldn't be anywhere else. I was afraid. And not to mention the restraining order. But my first 3 months, I spent, you know, unencumbered by sponsorship in the book, you know, and I thought I was working, I thought I was in the program. And I didn't know until I almost took myself out sober, if you want to call it sober, dry. Because you take an alcoholic's medicine away. I don't know about you guys, but I don't do better. You know, I do worse. The only thing I do better is feel anger and feel resentment and feel anxiety. And 3 months into this deal, I was suicidal again. And somebody approached me with the program, which is the book. And once I engaged in that, I've been chasing this thing ever since. I was that guy grabbing onto that life preserver like a drowning man. And I encourage anybody that's suffering to do the same. You know, just chase it. You know, I chased speakers. That's what I did. I chased people and speakers. That's what I did. And it just started to click. You know, the speakers, if I didn't know who was speaking, I would ask, who's going to be there? You know, do I know somebody that's going to be there? Because the guys I would meet at those speaker meetings were the guys that had what I wanted. And I knew if they were going to see this guy speak, then the guy must be pretty good, so I'm going to chase them. And is Billy going to be there? Is Dave going to be there? Is, you know, Joe going to be there? And if they were there, that's where I went. We're going to talk about 6 and 7. I don't know yet how, like, that's what my plan is to talk about 6 and 7. And it's all, you know, it's all been leading here. You know, I think I'm making progress with this step, and I do. I think I have made a lot of progress with this step. But this is the deal. This is the real stuff right here. The sixth step starts out with, this is the step that separates the men from the boys. This is the step that separates the women from the girls. I mean, this is where the rubber hits the road. It's all been leading here. It's all been leading up to this spot to expose the fact that I have defects of character that are causing me conflict with the world. And I got to tell you this quick story before I get to tell you. We did a conference up in Stewart this weekend, and I was invited to speak up there. But man, there was some heavy hitters there. You know, I mean, these guys were circuit speakers. I mean, these guys, they travel all over the world. A lot of these guys, and there's still a part of me, although I felt humbled to be there, there's a part of me that felt unworthy. You know, and I don't know where that dialogue comes from. You know, but I just, you know, once again, for a moment, I feel a part of, right? I feel apart from, not a part of, but apart from. So, you know, we all did one step or two steps. There was 10 speakers, or a couple did their stories, and everybody else did two steps. And mine was 6 and 7, which is what I'm talking about tonight. And I get up there to do, and I'm doing this talk on 6 and 7. You know, we're going to talk a lot about the instinctual drives tonight. You know, we're going to talk about a lot of what makes me who I am. This need to satisfy this social instinct, right? The need to be liked and accepted. You know, the need to satisfy the security instinct, to have nice things and impress other people, and, you know, and the need to satisfy the sex instinct. Most importantly for me is what you think of me. But I'd like to tell you, I don't care what you think of me. You know, and I'll say that out loud. I'll say, I don't give a shit what you think of me. You know, I just will. You know, I don't care if you like, you know, because you always, like, when you're at a podium, you expose yourself and you open yourself up for criticism, and that's just the way it is. And if you don't want to get criticized, just don't do anything. You know, if you don't want to upset anybody or hurt anybody's feelings, don't stand for anything, don't have any passion about anything, and don't get up at the podium, and then you won't be in conflict with anybody. You know, because somebody out there is going, that guy's full of shit, and somebody else is going to go, that guy's awesome. You know, I mean, it's just the way it is. And, you know, and so I want to impress, right? I want this to be my best ever 6 to 7 step talk because there's these guys there that I want to be part of the clique. And I wish I didn't even have to say that. I really, I'm 2.5 decades, over 2.5 decades into this thing, and I'm still freaking worried about what you think of me, but I don't care what you think of me. And so I start my talk, and I'm partway into the talk, maybe a couple, 5 minutes into the talk, and the guy who I thought was like the best speaker there gets up and walks out, you know? And sure, I know it was about me. I'm sure he didn't have to go to the bathroom or anything like that, you know? But it bothers me that it bothers me still. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I'm doing this talk, and fortunately, my mind can multitask. Is anybody else like you, like that? Like, do you have conversations going on while you're talking to people? Like, I do. I have this argument now going on in my head. What the hell was that? That's that rude son, that SOB just got up, and this is what I'm taught not to do in AAs, not interrupt, respect the speaker, do it. And I got this conversation in the background going on in my head while I'm doing this 6 and 7. I don't even know what I said. And it was, I spoke for an hour. I don't have a clue what the hell I said. The words kept coming, but that's been the story of my life. That has been the story of my life, you know. Now, the only difference between now and before I connected with God, which has solved my problem, which was I couldn't stay stopped, right? That was the problem. Not that I don't have other issues. That my problem and the reason why I came to AA and the solution that I wanted in AA was, please keep me stopped. I can't stay stopped. And recovered is a place where we can stay stopped. And the difference between me before I got here and had that experience and today is I don't drink over it. You know, I have another solution over it. You know, I tap into that power and I go there. And I can find relief in prayer and pray for that ignorant, rude bastard, you know. And it just, I mean, that's a shame that I'm still caught up in it. But I don't care what he thinks of me, you know. And we're going to talk about these, what we're going to really talk about is alcoholism, right? I mean, that's where we're at now, right? Like, the alcohol problem has somewhat been removed, right, at this point. At 6 and 7, I mean, we've had some awakenings or experiences along the way. We have. I mean, in step 4, we've been given tools to overcome resentments like I just had, and fear and guilt and remorse. We're given tools right there, and we begin to have an experience right there. And in 5, I shared with you guys last week that I had a vital spiritual experience in step 5. I had truly a spiritual experience in step 5. And I really felt like I had this new start and that slate was wiped clean and I had tapped into something. And we choose to call it God. And look, when I say the word God, whatever you're thinking about, when I say God, whatever comes to your mind, that's what I'm talking about, right? Whatever your conception is, that's what I'm talking about, you know? And I had this experience with God, and I really truly felt that the problem had been removed. But these two steps, this is where the rubber hits the road. This is where we got to change. This is where there has to be some demonstration of change here, or we just fall back into the behavior that we just admitted was objectionable. You know, we just build another 4-step. You know, we just still continue to stay in conflict with other people, trying to satisfy these instinctual drives. We put ourselves in conflict with other people, and we build another 4-step. You know, the tools of change is what Bill called them. The 2 steps that he added. You know, we if you look back at the history of AA, they were working on they were using a 6-step program. You know, at in early AA. Page 263, Earl Treat's story. He sold himself short. They're listed right there. There actually was 6-step. I've heard old timers say there was never a 6-step program. Well, maybe not in your town, but in Akron and Cleveland, they were using 6 tenets. They pulled it from, but a 6-step program that's listed on page 263 that Dr. Bob used to take probably 5,000 people through the steps. You know, And they pulled those six steps out of the tenets of the Oxford groups. There was 28 tenets of the Oxford groups, and we see them in the foreword of the second edition, right? We see them listed there. You know, surrender, inventory, confession, restitution, belief in a dependence upon God, and helpfulness to others. They were kind of the six steps that were pulled out of those tenets, right? And when Bill writes the 12 steps, he just thought there was too much wiggle room in the six-step program. And he pulls the first two steps out of William James' Variety of Religious Experiences, which, by the way, he read in Detox. Has anybody tried to read that book? Right? I can't get through it. You know, I had to get the CD to get through it. Right? I mean, it's hard reading. He read it. He was 7 to 10 days in Towns Hospital detoxing. He read it. Now, he probably read the lecture on spiritual experiences. I think it's a William James' ninth lecture that he does. And he pulls the first two steps out of there, and we talk about that, right? Facing defeat and admitting defeat, the first two steps, right? And appealing to a power greater than human power to solve the problem, right? And we see the first two steps. We see one and two right there. Admitting defeat, step one, and appealing to a higher power for a solution, step two. The step three was already in place, the surrender, the inventory step, the confession step. He adds eight for restitution because alcoholics got to get ready before they do something, right? And he plugged six and seven in there, the tools of change. And there's a reason why they're plugged in, like six and seven is plugged in after five and before eight, right? Because if there isn't some kind of demonstration of change when we go to make amends, it means nothing. Right? I want to see some demonstration, right? It doesn't necessarily have to come first, but boy, it speaks a lot louder when we show up differently, when we show up and we're not asking for anything, when we show up and we're not taking anything, right? That we've changed. And I see, look, we're around it all the time. We see people, as Bill said, there was something different about his eyes, right? There was something inexplicably different. The people that love us see that immediately. When we show up and we're bringing something to the table instead of asking for something. Yeah. And sometimes that demonstration can come in just small, just a card, for God's sake. I tell my guys when we get to this step, we're not at 8 and 9, but damn it, find out when your mother's birthday is. Find out when your children's birthday is. Find out where your cousin's birthday is. You want to start making amends? Send them a freaking birthday card. Cost you a couple dollars. That's a demonstration, and I want to tell you, for my mother, it meant more than telling her I was the ninja coming into her bedroom stealing money out of her wallet, you know, and I was that guy. I was like, it was like covert operations, you know. I was crawling in her bedroom while she was, poor lady was waitressing all night, and I'm crawling through her bedroom trying to get money to get high. And the birthday card lit her up. The fact I told her I was going to pay her back the money, yeah, you know. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. But there has to be some change that takes place, and that's what these two steps are. You know, be willing and then ask God to remove them, because there's not much I can do about them. I've been inspired to talk about these differently lately. There's something different going on. I started looking back at my early life, and even today, but I can look back. Before I started drinking, that these instinctual drives were causing emotional problems in my life then, as they do still. That all of my emotional problems, all of my conflict seems to come in the perversion of these instincts. You know, taking these instincts beyond what God intended them to be. You know, and we're talking about attention, and we're talking about material. We're talking about the social, the material, and the sex. We're talking about all three of them. And one of the reasons why I fell so in love with alcohol is that I share with you guys, I had my first drink at 16 years old. And I really want to talk about alcoholism, because I suffered from alcoholism way before I got addicted to alcohol. Or dependent on alcohol, right? Because everybody gets addicted. Look, I mean, there's addicted, there's dependent. Alcoholics are dependent, right? Addicts get addicted. Everybody gets addicted. Anybody that does oxys for a period of time is going to get addicted to them. Anybody that smokes crack for a period of time is going to get addicted to it. You use an IV, you're going to get addicted to it. That's the deal. But a lot of them guys, like Jimmy D, I don't know if I shared my story about Jimmy D. that I drank with for years. Did I ever tell you about Jimmy D? Jimmy D and I got high in Pittsburgh. We got high here. Right? We ran, man. You know, we did all kinds of drugs and drinking. We did all kinds of stuff together. One night, Jimmy D, we were in a biker's bar in Margate, right just south of Royal Palm Boulevard. I remember it well. Jimmy's wife called him and said, if you don't come home now, I'm getting a divorce. Freaking Jimmy went home. You wimp. Are you kidding me? Jimmy's still married. 30-some freaking years later. He's got four beautiful kids, beautiful wife, great life. I'm on my third. Because nobody tells me what to do. I'm a grown-ass man. You know what I mean? That's just the deal. You know, you don't tell me what. You ain't my mother. What are you, my mother? I mean, that's the kind of rationale that I have, right? Now, I'm telling you, Jimmy was as addicted as I was. And I don't know if Jimmy went to treatment or if Jimmy just detoxed at home or his wife got him through. I don't know. You know, and there's a lot of people like that I got high together with, and we drank together, and you just don't see them anymore. They just all of a sudden they got families and children and had a career, but they did the same thing I did, and I think some of them went to treatment, and they went to treatment and they got detoxed, and they said, I'm never going to do that again, and they didn't, but we'll go spend $5,000 a week. Right? We'll go $5,000 a week and we'll leave there and 3 days later going, shit, I just need a little bump. That's all. You know, that's all. You know, I just need three drinks because I'm not going to do that again. I'm just going to have the three drink thing again. Right? And multiple treatment centers. Right? Lose multiple relationships. Go to jail. And still pick up. That's the difference. You know, whether you can quit on a non-spiritual basis depends on whether you're the real deal or not, right? Because the non-alcoholic, given sufficient reason, doesn't pick up. The alcoholic picks up in facing the loss of his freedom or her freedom, facing the loss of relationships. I lost custody of my son because I refuse to have anybody tell me what to do. Yeah. And that includes judges and ex-wives, and employers. Because alcohol did for me something so special, right? Because as a child, I needed to somehow satisfy those instinctual drives, and I wasn't capable of it. I couldn't get in the middle of the crowd. I couldn't be part of. I knew I'd never be socially accepted. Whether it was the dialogue telling me that I wasn't worthy, or whether it was the fact that my personality just wouldn't allow it, or whether it was fear, I just couldn't be part of it. Alcoholism. I knew I would never have the things that everybody else had. You know, I don't have any help from my parents. I don't have my father that's around. I don't have no. These guys got help. I knew I would never get the sex instinct satisfied. That would just never happen. That was just never going to. I would never be able to go ask somebody out. I mean, that's just, who would want to go out with me? That's the dialogue that took place in my life. And I share with you guys, when I picked up that drink, when I got halfway through that bottle of Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill, I was John Travolta, man. You know, I was the man. And it allowed me to finally become part of something. And feel good about myself and be okay with what I saw in the mirror and go up and ask somebody out. And if they said no, you're lost. Yeah. Instead of shoot myself because they said no. Now, how do you live without that? How do you not fall in love with that? And I was in love with that. You know, and I wish I could tell you that at step 6 and 7, those instinctual drives just reeled themselves in, and all of a sudden I'm okay not being part of, and I'm okay not being liked and accepted, and I'm okay not being in a relationship. It's just not the case. You know. And in step 3, when we get to the third step, they tell us that this is our problem. is that the perversion of these instincts, that these instinctual drives are so pleasurable that we can't get enough of them. We suffer from alcoholism that manifests itself in those drives. That I can't get enough pleasure. I can't. I will step on relationships. I will step outside of relationships for brief moments of pleasure because it feels good. I don't even think about the consequences. I just think about what that's going to do for me, not what it's going to do to me. And I end up in conflict with a relationship or break up with the relationship or divorced again because I can't reel that instinct in. And I can't believe you're going to do that to me. I can't believe you won't forgive me. All right, I made a mistake. You can't unring certain bells. You just can't unring them. It didn't go away. It didn't go away in 67. I am freaking powerless over these instinctual drives. And I think I'm making progress with them. And I'd like to tell you I'm making progress with them. And I have. I really believe I have made progress with them. And I'm fine, it seems, as long as you don't come up against those drives. But I'm going around fine as long as you don't threaten what people think of me, or you don't threaten my pocketbook, or you don't threaten my relationship, because not only is there satisfaction in them, there's validation in them. I'm validated by what you think of me. I'm validated by what I drive. I'm validated when you got the big expensive watch on, and somebody says, "Nice watch." I go, "Yeah. Look at that watch. Is that your truck?" "Yeah, it's my truck right there. Big truck. That big truck over there is mine. Not that Tempo. That Tempo ain't mine. But that big truck over there, that's mine." You don't know the Tempo story. That was my first new car. Some fantastic salesman sold me a fully loaded Ford Tempo. Nobody buys a fully loaded Ford Tempo. I thought it was the best thing I ever owned. I was so proud of that car until I got it to my buddy's house. He goes, "Who the F buys a Ford Tempo that's low? That's an old man's car. I liked that car for 1 hour." Right? And now I got to get rid of it. Now I hate that car. And that's the cycle we're stuck in, right? We get the approval by the nice car or the nice thing, and it lasts for a brief period of time. And then I need more approval. Let me buy something else. Let me get a bigger truck. Let me get a bigger car. And then you'll like me and I'll be part of. Yeah. And the sex instinct is a driving force in our lives. It's been a driving force in my whole life. It's been since 13 years old, I think. I think it was 13 or so, right in that area where my whole goal in life was getting laid. I mean, that was just the deal, you know. That was all I could think about for the rest of my life is that's the deal. You know, get the car, get the watch. Get the job so you can get laid. I mean, that was the deal, you know. I know I'm alone there, you know. And you know what? It wasn't even about that. I would just assume you think I was getting laid. You know what I mean? I was like afraid of that in a way. Because what happens if I don't perform properly, you know? What happens if I fall short? What happens if she laughs? Oh, my God, you know. I'd rather you think I was getting laid than actually have sex, you know? That's just true. I wanted to just hold my hand while the guys are around. You know, just make me, let them think I'm with you, you know? And I feel, you know, like I'm cruising along and I'm feeling really sober and then somebody steps on one of those instincts, you know? Just like this weekend. You know, I'm cruising along, and I think I'm doing great, and somebody doesn't validate me. You know, somebody, and that's a resentment, by the way. When we talked about the definition of a resentment, real or imagined, that was a freaking imagined resentment right there. Right, I made up a story, you know? And then I replayed that story until it was real. And the fact that I'm still talking about it means I ain't over it. The fact that I had to come here and share it with you people means it's still renting space in my damn head. But I don't care what he thinks of me. You see, you know what? Bill talks about progress towards perfection. He brings that, you know, our steps or how it works says progress, not perfection. But he ramps that up a notch if you get into the 12 and 12, right? When he talks about in the 12 and 12, he starts to include the absolutes in there, right? He didn't want the absolutes in AA. He didn't want the absolutes in the program because he knew we couldn't be absolutely anything. The four absolutes that they were using in Cleveland and Akron, they weren't using them in New York. And Bill wasn't even going to include them in the big book. Because he didn't want, you know, alcohol is absolute love, absolute honesty, absolute purity, you know, absolute unselfishness. That's just a bar too high. And he was right. He was right. But boy, we start to hear that language in the 12 and 12 when we start reading 6 and 7, don't we? Because he changes it from progress not perfection to progress towards perfection, and that should be the goal. The perfection should be the goal, that the elimination of the perversion of these instincts, the real in these instinctual drives into where God intended them to be in the first place, instead of using them like a drug, because there's a dopamine dump attached to them. And there is. That's what it's all about. How do you affect the pleasure center of my brain? Validate me. Go buy something nice. It feels good. Dopamine dump. Right? Sex. Massive dopamine dump, you know. It's what it's about. It's pleasure. I'm a pleasure seeker. Takes me out of me. I don't have to be me when I'm feeling that. It becomes the new drug. It becomes the new obsession. And we see that. Look, and I don't want to take anybody's inventory, but I used to think that how do people stay sober and continue to pervert those instinctual drives? We see it in the rooms all the time. I don't mean to take inventory, but it's just a fact of life. We see predators in these rooms. I know guys that have extorted people in these rooms. Right? I know guys that do things that are just unholy. They're just wrong. They're sinful. And they're freaking not drinking. So maybe half measures do give us something. It says avail us nothing. Maybe that's not true. I know guys that have 30 years in here that are... I should reel that in, huh? And I'm sorry, it's just a fact. You guys see it. You guys see the shit that goes... People who lie for a living. Lie all day long for a living. Sell shit that don't even exist. And yet they're not freaking drinking. But do I want what they have? I don't want what they have. That ain't what I got. That ain't why I came here. I want this book, what this book says, and it's called freedom. I want freedom. I want freedom from the bondage of self. I want freedom from that bondage. I don't want to have to worry about who's going to find out what I did. I don't want to live in that fear anymore. Those umbrellas of fear, right? Not going to get what I want. They're going to take what I got. They're going to find out what I do. They're going to find out how I really behave. It's just that, you know, that was an example right there. I'll give you a couple more stories of where I can go, and I think I'm sober, right? I think I've got this thing. And one of my two favorite stories, one of them is I'm working on this lady's house, and I'm putting this microwave in, right, this over-the-range microwave. And the lady starts to tell me what I'm doing. And this is when I fall. This is when it all hell breaks loose. When I tell her I am the best at what I do, back off. I've been doing this for 35 freaking years, right? That's like a curse right there, right? So she goes, okay, you know, she backs off. I start tapping a piece of wood over here, and a piece of wood falls on her stove. And dents the back panel of her stove, right? Brand new stove, right? And now, self-preservation kicks in at this point, right? This is a $500 freaking range, so my pocketbook is going to be affected big time. I just told her I'm the best at what I do, and I just destroyed her range, I look like an asshole, right? So now what I'm doing, I peel the drop cloth back, and now I try to straighten the dent with my hands. And then I got like mental telepathy going on there. Like somehow I'm going to mentally make this thing straight. Because I know when I was doing psychotropics back in the 70s, I was able to move objects. You know, I was. I could concentrate on an object on the table and it moved. I know it did. And you can laugh, but I've seen it happen. You know. And so I'm all over this. And I keep looking over my shoulder and looking there and looking over my shoulder. I want to beat this rap. The last thing I want to do in that moment is to be honest and say, I just dented your range. I'm going to have to buy you a new range. But I know that's what's got to happen. And that's the difference between me today and me when I got here. Because there was a time. Now, I'm not going to tell you I didn't think about sneaking out of there. You know, like distracting her and her not seeing it until I was gone and then denying it. You know, that was one plan, you know. See, there's still a part of me that is just so wrapped up in how I'm perceived that I will sacrifice my spirituality. I will sacrifice my program because I know when I leave there, I'm not going to be able to live with that. That you talk about renting space. How long is it going to take for me to let that go? How do I pray my way out of that? Yeah. And before I leave, I admit, look, I dented your range. You know, I'll make it right. You know. And she allowed me, just to go a little further with that story, she allowed me to order the part, which came in wrong 3 times. And finally, her husband called me and said, you either put that range in or, you know, I'm filing a claim. And I said, okay, no problem. You know, I'll suck it up. And let me tell you, me of little faith, right, that if I could just do the right thing, everything will work out. Why is it that I still question, after what God has done in my life, after what this program has done in my life, why is it that I'm still unwilling to believe that if I just do the right thing, everything will be right? Right? I go to the dealer where I do work. I contract for this guy, these people. And I tell them, this is what happened. I damaged a range that you guys delivered the other day. I need to replace the range. Look it up. Tell me how much it is. I'll give you my card. And they look up the range and they write up the order. And the manager comes over to me and says, Pat, you've been working for us for 27 years. You have bailed us out more times than we can count. And just a little token of our appreciation, just take the range. You know? And they didn't even charge me for it. You know? But I don't have that kind of faith, you know. I still can't do my own taxes. I got this spiritual warfare that goes on in my mind. Like, I got Yoda on one shoulder and Vader on the other. You know what I mean? Like, Yoda's going, right thing you should do, you know. And Vader's going, fuck them, you know, go for it, you know. It's just... And I'm looking at my, is this dinner business or pleasure? Is it business or, I just can't do it, you know? I don't know why. I still don't have the faith that if I just file a legitimate income tax return, that everything will be fine, that God will provide. Always has. So I don't do them. I give them to an accountant. I print it out and I say, here, tell me what I owe or what they owe me. I don't want to get involved, you know. And it's just how I could maintain my spiritual fitness. It's just I'm just not capable. Because I go through this argument. Everybody cheats. That's why they pod so much taxes. Everybody, you know, everybody writes stuff up that's not legitimate. Right? Just I can't do it, you know. So I let somebody else do it. I was on my way here last year to speak about spiritual principles. Mm-hmm. And I back out of my driveway, and I forget that my stepdaughter parked her car, her Cadillac, beside me. And I wipe out the whole side of her car, turn it out of the driveway, right? You know what I do? I run in the garage, and I get rubbing compound and a plunger, right? And I come out with a plunger, and I pop these dents out of her car with this. All I needed was a ski mask, you know? And I'm taking my paint off of her car and her car paint off. And I'm looking around, like, is anybody watching? And I'm thinking, I could get the hell out of here. She'll think it happened in a shopping center or something, you know? And I left. I freaking left. I'm on my way here. Probably talking about 11 or something, you know. Practice these principles. Step 12. You know, all my affairs. You know what happens to hypocrites here? They get high. They get drunk. You know, and now I got this spiritual warfare going on the way to Alcoholics and God, you know, and I have to surrender. I don't know why I can't just go in the house and say, look what I just did. You know, I have to be halfway here before I make the phone call and say, I just wiped out your daughter's car. Let me know how much the deductible is. You know, as soon as you come up against those instincts, as soon as you come up against those drives, this protection, this self-preservation comes forward. And I don't know if that'll ever go away. You know? They're objectionable, that's for damn sure. And look, the real objectionable stuff I've been able to stop, like I don't do B&Es anymore. You know? Like I don't flat out just steal stuff anymore. You know? I don't lie much anymore. You know? I mean, it's like, I don't know, you know, I always like to give this analogy. Like, if I find $20 or even $50 or even $100 right here, I'm going to ask who lost it. That's who I am today, righteous, honest Pat, you know. But if I find a Bank of America bag of money in the woods that fell off of a truck somewhere unmarked, $20,000, $30,000 in it, I don't know, man, you know. I'm pretty sure I'm giving it back, you know. I know I'm going to look around. You know, it's like hitting the car in the parking lot. Nobody's around, you know. Like, shit. They think I'm leaving a note, giving you my number. But I don't want to live like that. I don't want to live with that cloud over me anymore. That's why I've done the rest of these steps. You know, so that I don't have to live like that anymore. So I don't have to worry when I'm spending the Bank of America money if it is marked, or do they have these serial numbers, or, you know, just having that cloud hang over me. I don't want to live like that anymore. You know? So the grosser handicaps kind of just drop off, but the road starts to narrow, don't it? The road starts to narrow. You know, what was objectionable when I got here was way out here. But now that road has started to narrow, and some of the things that I thought were acceptable when I got here are no longer acceptable. And as we grow spiritually, the road really narrows, you know. And now I'm chasing litter and shit, you know. It's like, you know, a piece of paper blows out of my truck, and I'm running across 95 trying to grab it, you know. Because it's the right thing to do. Because it's the right thing to do, you know. And it's a little something. You know, one of the best, a lot of you guys knew Kenny Kane. And Kenny was, I was in conflict with Kenny for a while, but I really came to love Kenny. And Kenny, I was under 5 years sober, and Kenny was doing a talk on the sixth step. And Kenny said, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, how he opened up the sixth step. He said, we're going to talk about the sixth step. And he said, I just want to tell you that when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, they told me I had to shoplift less. And I went, that son of a bitch is a thief. We got a thief chairing our meeting. But he was right. And At first, I judged him on that. I said, how can you continue to, because I'm thinking absolute. You know, I'm thinking that any type of lying and stealing is going to get you drunk, you know. And what Kenny was saying was, this is about going from felonies to misdemeanors, you know. This is like stop doing B&Es and just shoplift, you know. And then stop shoplifting, you know. He was like, shoplift less. And that sounds like a terrible analogy, but he's right. Lie less. Right? Lie less. Because it's difficult when you're, you know, when we're trying to satisfy the world and we're trying to satisfy these instinctual drives, and I'm so caught up in what you think of me, it's hard to be honest all the time. It takes practice. I've been lying for so long. I've been dope fiending people for so long. It's a hard practice to stop. You know, and sometimes the best I can do is just shut up. Yeah. And it's little stuff. It's stuff that I think is big, but nobody else really cares. You know, I'm late for work. They go, why? Because I got up late, and they asked me, what's happening? How come you're late? I caught the bridge on the way. I just lied. But it's only a little lie. It didn't hurt nobody. But in the back of my head, I'm going, you just lied. Because I'm worried. I don't want you to think I'm stupid. I can't get up on time. I don't want to hear the conversation. Do you have an alarm clock? You know, I don't want to hear that conversation. I'm sorry. But I know that I just lied. And then it happens again about a month later. And I'm late again. I go, again? You're late again? Yeah, train. You know, what, no damn train? You know, I just don't want to look stupid. And then the next time it comes along and I'm late, and they go, what happened? And I just, and I just walk away, you know, because I don't want to lie anymore. You know? And then eventually I get to a point where I'm going, hey, slept in. Oh, okay. You know, most of the time they don't even care. You know? It's practice. It takes practice. That's what this is. You know, there's the two simple paragraphs, which are probably the most important steps in the program. Everybody talks about them, the shortest steps. Maybe 8 might be the shortest step in the book as far as mechanics is concerned. But Bill, later on, you know, 6 lines to 7 pages in 6, 7 lines to 7 pages in 7. He's got a lot more to talk about. And I don't think that he made them short because he made a mistake. I think he made them short because it's this simple. Stop doing what you shouldn't do and start doing what you should do. Right? We've seen the objection, the whole exercise. We were exposed in step 3. This is what's putting you in conflict with everybody. You're selfish. You're self-centered. You're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-pity, self-delusion. Those instinctual drives and satisfying and perverting those drives has put you in conflict with everybody and everything. That is your problem. Your selfishness is what's killing you. Though we usually don't think so, right? And that's what they're talking about. When they say self-will run riot, that's what they're talking about. Taking that self-will, taking them instinctual drives, and stepping on everybody's toes to satisfy them. That's self-will run riot. I didn't even know that until I got it. I didn't even know. People would say, you're self-will run riot. No, I'm not. I didn't even know what they were talking about. That's what they're talking about. My need for your attention. I'll do anything. I'll lie. I'll do anything. I'll tell you I was at concerts I've never been to just to be part of the conversation. I've done it over and over. I've done it in sobriety. I used to tell people I saw Eric Clapton. I never saw Eric Clapton. You know, I told that lie so long I believed it. I'd tell you what he was wearing. It was in Three Rivers Stadium in Pittsburgh. I'd tell you the date. You know, I'd tell you who he was playing with, how he was laying on the couch. And I had a whole story going there, you know. I never seen him. Finally, I did, by the way. You know, a couple years ago, I saw him at the Hard Rock. So now that's not a lie anymore. But I said the same thing about it. I'm sober sitting at Starbucks one day early in recovery. Somebody says, I saw Pink Floyd. I said, me too. I never seen Pink Floyd. I don't know. I just want to be part of, you know. I just want to be part of the conversation. It just leads to one lie after another, you know. And then you got to remember that shit. That's, you know, and who you told what. I hope to see Pink Floyd someday. You know. It won't be a lie anymore. You know, I'm just so caught up in that. And in 4, that was exposed, right? In 4, that was exposed. Everything peaks right here. Everything is peaking at 6 and 7, and everything is coming back here. And in my opinion, that's why you need to get through these steps quickly, because it's in 10 that you're going to keep these in check. And if you don't get to 10 for another year, you're going to create another 4th step in 6 and 7. These were designed to do quickly, so that you can incorporate these checks and balances in 6 and 7 immediately. We've exposed it in 4. We've saw it. It isn't even, it's not who it was. It's not what they did. It's how I was affected. How did you affect my social insecurity and sex instinct? Had nothing to do with them, really. It was what they did, how they affected my instinctual drives. Even in the harms list, it was what instinct was I trying to satisfy? It was in my satisfying instincts that I hurt other people. Look at the sex inventory, for God's sake. I like to call it a relationship inventory. Look at the relationship inventory. The need to satisfy those drives, to let people think that I was having sex, or having sex because it was so pleasurable, I just stepped on all these people's toes. It wouldn't have mattered who it was. I was going to satisfy that drive, and didn't matter. And I was deeply in love with someone. The girl of my dreams, probably in high school. I was probably meant to marry that girl. Didn't stop me. Didn't stop me from destroying that relationship for a moment of pleasure. We've done a lot of harm in these drives, and that's all been exposed. And at this point, we got to do something about them. Here's the rub. I can't. I am freaking powerless over them. I just am. It's instinctual, you know. They're good and God-given if I keep them where God intended them to be. I am as powerless over these instinctual drives as I am over alcohol and drugs. And the seventh step in the big book, in the 12 and 12 talks about that if God could remove the merciless obsession to drink and drug, then surely if I'm willing, with humility as my guide, that he could remove these two, that he could reel these in for me, or it or she, whatever your conception is, that power could reel these instinctual drives if I was willing. But I'm not always willing because there's pleasure here. I'm not always willing. We talk about trust. They use the word trust in these steps. Trust God. Trust means position yourself properly. Position you. If you're asking God for help, then you need to position yourself. A GPS, a God positioning sensor. You know, you need to put yourself in the right spot where God can help. If you're asking God to remove you, to move the obsession to drink, you got to stay out of the bar. You can't test God. You're asking him to remove, trust him, stay out of the bar. You're asking him to remove this insatiable desire for sex, stay out of the strip club. Stay off the porn site. Trust has a lot to do with positioning. Now, it takes a lot of prayer and meditation. Look, they gave us a prayer for resentment. They gave us one for fear. They gave us three for sex, you know, because they know it's a driving force. There's too much pleasure in it. Now we have other things. I mean, now we got social media. I mean, it's like that's become the new crack cocaine, for God's sake. You know, you just can't even stay off it for an hour. There's people here just jonesing. They're detoxing because they ain't seen fucking Facebook, you know, for an hour. You know, it's like crazy. I feel it vibrating on my ass, and I just can't. I got to look. I got to see. Somebody probably liked one of my damn posts, and, you know, and I can't even see it because there's a dopamine dump attached to that. That's validation. You know, 100 likes. Look at this shit. You know, 100 likes. Yeah. 200 likes. Look at that. Yeah. And it can have the opposite effect too, right? It can have the opposite effect. Damn, I said I loved her and she didn't respond. Mm-hmm. You know? She didn't even like it. Mm-hmm. You know? No, she's on. I see the green dot. You know? This is bullshit right here. She liked Joe's post. I wonder if her and Joe got some shit going on. Yeah? But that's where my, you know, crazy person here. You know, I'll make a whole thing. I want to, man, it's going to be hard to split all this shit up at this point. You know? Because she didn't like my post, you know. Crazy, right? Technology, right? The validation that comes through it. I am powerless over it. Only God can help me there. You know, the Apostle Paul, who's one of my favorites, Saul, who became the Apostle Paul. Saul was the most broken person on the planet. You know, probably the most broken person in history. And I'm not trying to sell anything. I just fell in love with this guy. And this guy was out there murdering Christians. I mean, that was his job, was to kill off the Christians and stop a movement. And he has a spiritual experience in the middle of the desert that he never recants and devotes the rest of his life into carrying a message of love. Most of his life in prison, he writes a lot of the bigger book, the Bible. And Paul just is one of my favorites. He says so many things that just resonate with me in recovery. I think he was one of us. I really do, you know. And one of the things he says, and there's about three of them that I just fall in love. One of them is, and it kind of speaks to the third step, which is exposing those drives. And it says, capture every thought. Capture the thought and bring it into obedience. Right? And we know what he was talking about, who he was obedient to. But bring it into spiritual principles. Where's this thought going? See, that's a problem for me because my thinking turns to an emotion and then it turns to action. I emosh. You know, that's what I do. I'm an emosher, you know. And my emotions are dictated by you, usually. I don't just think and then act. I think, emosh, and then act. You know. Capture the thought and guide that thought. That's third step stuff. The other thing I love what he says is that what I should do, I do not, and what I should not do, I do, which means that everybody falls short. Bill said, one of my favorite paragraphs of Bill is in at the end of How It Works, where he talks about, suppose we fall short of the chosen ideal, does that mean we're going to drink? No, not always, because we're broken. The human condition is a broken condition. It's a flawed condition. We're imperfect people. But if we recognize that we fell short and we ask God to take us to better things, step 7, then we'll surely get back on the path and we surely won't drink. But if we continue to partake in behavior that we know is wrong, then we will drink. That real addicts and real alcoholics will get high. These are facts out of our experience. Right? So Bill talks about perfection in the 12 and 12, and he talks about aiming towards perfection. Shoot the arrow towards perfection, and that's where we want to get. And we're never going to reach it, but in shooting for it, in working for it, we'll become better people. Paul also said successful living comes from daily dying. And it's about killing the old self off a little bit each day and trying to incorporate these principles to the best of my ability each day and shoot for progress. I want to be perfect, knowing I'll never get there, but as I walk this road, I'll become a much better person along the way. Thanks for letting me be here tonight.
Thank you, Pat. Can you guys help me thank the speaker, Pat, one more time? All right, next we're going to bring our joke guy back up. He's also our secretary. So, Ryan.
Hi, my name is Ryan, and I'm a recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. And I've asked Darren to read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. Yeah.
I'm Darren. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Darren.
Recovered. We are not cured of alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
(clears throat) 1940s-style big book sponsorship from the foreword to the second edition of Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? That's a lot of people. And is there anybody in the room that needs a sponsor? You could just raise your hand. No? Oh, we got some people over here. So if you see any of those people that had their hands raised earlier, they can help get you back to God. So, please join us Monday nights for our big book study meeting where the book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30, and then we have the meeting starting at 7:15. We also have CDs, mugs, large print big books, little red books, big book dictionaries. If you're looking for that perfect gift for your sponsor, it's right back there. We meet every Thursday, except for next Thursday. We will not be meeting next Thursday because it's Thanksgiving, so I don't know about you guys, but with all the turkey I'm going to eat, I'm not even going to want to take one step, let alone 12, so... We're not going to meet next Thursday, but there is Alcathons going on. We've heard that 12-Step House is doing an Alcathon. It's going to be like a meeting every hour. Also, Fourth Dimension Group in Hollywood is going to be doing something from 1 p.m. till 12 a.m. on Thursday. So if you need to get to a meeting, there are places available for you to go. And then we have some announcements. Broward County Intergroup. There's all the information for contacting them, their hours of operation. You can get literature, you can get medallions, you can rent sponsors. We've also got volunteer opportunities. So if you're looking for a way to give back, there's a couple ways up there. AA's Got Talent. It's going to be a bunch of drunks singing and dancing, so I'm not even going to really say anything else about that. Winterfest Dinner and Ice Cream Social. And my favorite part is that there's an ugliest sweater contest, so I think I got that in the bag. That's it. One more reminder, we do have a 75-foot invisible no smoking or vape zone in front of the doors. We do have buckets set up down here, so if you could just wait to light up until you get down there, that'd be great. They have the Boy Scouts upstairs, and they're trying to quit. So that's pretty much it. Thank you, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you, Brian. Just so everyone knows, tonight's session is on podcast. If you miss a week and you want to catch up, you're welcome to do so. It's online at alcoholicsandgod.org. Also, I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study. We break down the book, and yeah, please show up. It's a great time. nothing much to it. Those who wish to thank tonight's speaker, which you should, please just line up down the center aisle. He's going to be standing right here. And we are going to close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, never again, now that I understand.
zan, zan, zan. Oh, when you're smiling, when you're smiling, the whole world smiles with you, baby, baby. Yes, when you're laughing, when you're laughing, yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you're crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope
shine, let it shine, 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 let it shine. Out in the dark, I'm gonna let it shine. Out in the dark, I'm gonna let it shine. Out in the dark.
Michael Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. Fog is lifted. See the light, count my blessings when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Fear has left me and I'm standing tall. A pile of bricks now lies where once there stood a wall that I hid behind. For all this time, sometimes it takes a burning bush or a great white light to set you right. Well, my eyes don't cry now, and I'm out to dry. Pity party's over, the guest of honor has arrived, and he's on my side. For the first time in my life, are green now, growing vines. They twist and turn each way, flowers blooming all the time outside my door. But never before I had to change everything to realize that today is the best day of my life. Broken man, I travel far and wide, through the great divide, through his own heart, yeah. Well, I have a life today when it give away and it's just about to start. Brand new way, show up and plug in my guitar, and I play my songs, and people sing along, and stomp their feet and raise their arms, and here in this moment that we share, nothing could come lessons when I go to sleep at night, and I dream now. Yeah, I dream now, and everything's alright. Oh man, going on 10 years old, that song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.